Hi, folks. Welcome to another episode of Film Study. This is Ken McCusick, and it's time for this week's Friday Morning GM with co-host Voss Larikos. Voss, how you doing?
Good to be with you again, Ken. A little bit rejuvenated after the bye week, and hoping to see Lamar Jackson, the MVP quarterback, back on the field heading into this pivotal Chicago Bears matchup.
There is everybody else seems to be returning, basically. I'm not sure there's anybody who the Ravens don't have on IR, and Tavius Robinson moved there, that is not going to be available for this game otherwise, including Ronnie Stanley, which is incredible to me that he's practicing normally after what we've seen the last 3 weeks. But Marlon Humphrey is back. Kyle Hamilton, a small groin injury, but no big deal. But the one big question that remains is whether or not Lamar Jackson is going to play.
Oh, for sure. There was a little bit of a reality check, I guess, or I don't know what the right term is, but on Monday, when they had maybe an extra practice, Lamar did not suit up, and then he was 20 minutes late to practice on Wednesday, and there was a lot of anxiety that maybe he was not ready to go, and he still may not be, but we shall see as the week unfolds. Touching back on Ronnie Stanley, I need to see Ronnie make it through a game before I have complete confidence in him. But let's go into the transactions here, beginning with Tavius Robinson. Was put on IR, broken foot. We don't know what type of foot injury it is. I know some broken foot are worse than others. They estimated 6 to 8 weeks, which would put him back on the field in December if the Ravens are still in the hunt.
Like, the good news about that was that it's not a Liz Frank injury, apparently. And they thought, you know, you never know with a that's not a, one of those midfoot breaks that requires surgery, and they have to, you know, you're out a year, and then you might not be the same after that. So anyway, that at least is good news. They said it's more similar to what happened to Isaiah Likely in terms of the injury, and that it's a 6 to 8 week injury here. So loss of Tavius is enormous. I don't want to minimize that in any way. And the Ravens have no, they really haven't addressed it, which we'll need to talk about, but, it's hopefully is not a season ending injury.
Yeah, couldn't happen at a worse time. The week you trade Odafe away, you lose Tavius, so we're both eating up a lot of snaps. I don't know if it's the Jones foot fracture. I'm not quite sure, and probably need to research and find out more the differences in these injuries, because I likely hasn't done too much as he has since he's returned either. Mm-hmm.
No, that's certainly true. But, you know, we're hoping. I think the Ravens are still looking at Likely as a guy they want to sign for next year. So we'll see how this plays out the rest of this year. Emory Jones, of course, activated also from NFI. He'd already been kind of taken off NFI, and it's nothing he could revert to if the Ravens decided he wasn't healthy enough to play. But he still, it appears he's not healthy enough to play in this first week, even though he'll be on the roster. So I'm presuming he'll be inactive for this Sunday against the Bears.
Definitely agree there. I believe Harbaugh may mention that he has not been cleared by doctors to play in a game yet. So you're looking at 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 week runway potentially. And with the limited repetitions he received in the Ravens preseason and rookie camp and everything, I don't know what you can really expect from him. But hopefully they'll get on the field at some point and become a building block for the future for this team.
Well, I mean, I'd love for that to be true, but at some point, you know, if you're returning in week 14, let's say, the at some point would have been better served to be next year.
Yeah, I agree.
They might not have been able to work it out with Jones in terms of an NFI status that would last for the entire season, but that would have been the better move if the Ravens, I thought they had probably learned their lesson from the Ajabo situation and just how poorly that worked out. Voorhees seems to have worked out in the club's favor more in terms of redshirting him for a season, bringing him back, and then having him be, you know, a lineman who now has an extra year of runway, which he desperately needs in order to succeed.
Yes. Yes. Looking forward, I'm hoping that the Ravens avoid taking injured players early on, you know, with a team with a lot of big contracts. You need depth that's ready to contribute immediately. A player like Voorhees taken on day three, that's a swing worth taking with minimal risk, but Ojabo, as we saw, and now Jones, it diminishes the value of the pick if they're not able to contribute their first year.
Mm-hmm. Additional signings on the practice squad. You had a couple of guys.
Yeah, so the first one is Colton Dowell, a wide receiver, big-bodied wide receiver. He last played in 2023. He had 51 snaps on offense, 139 snaps on special teams. So he seems to be maybe one of those special teams type of additions that could potentially give Tylan Wallace a run for his roster spot long-term.
All right. So Dowell, a guy who where he previously played.
I believe it was Tennessee, but don't quote me on that.
Yes, that's correct. That's correct. Okay. Okay. So it looked like he'd been active for maybe about 9 weeks with Tennessee in 2023. So
tore his ACL last year, I think.
Gotcha. Okay. Seventh round pick in 23, by the way. That might have been the guy that might have been a guy the Ravens liked in that draft, but in any case, he's here now. Another guy, defensive tackle, David Olajiga. I don't know if I'm pronouncing that correctly. But the Ravens had a number of Nigerians that they've been looking at recently. I think there was another pass rusher, Ofada, that they had in the building or on the field to work out.
A tryout.
But I didn't see that anywhere in the NFL transactions. And they normally have visits listed, but I did not see that going back a few days for Ofada.
Yes, and I believe they worked out another Nigerian player, and there was a lot of quips made. This, you know, Eric DaCosta's not serious. This is what he's trying to do for. This was an extra spot. You might as well use it. Yeah. So, I mean, there's times to be critical, but there's times also, you know,
just shut your mouth.
so that's. I mean, we'll see what happens. It's nice to have that. You know, some baseball teams have that where they have, you know, a complex in the Dominican or somewhere else, and they have a pipeline, and the Ravens can have the pipeline to Nigeria and kind of corner that market. That's great. Just going back to the Dowell signing for a moment, I would have preferred to see a safety added to the practice squad. The Ravens currently only have four safeties on the 53, including Kyle Hamilton, who's a hybrid, and only Keandre Jackson on the practice squad. So I think depth remains a concern at safety.
Yeah, I would agree. I think six is the right number out of, I guess it's 70 total players, including an IPPP. And going back to the Nigerian thing for a second, be wonderful if the Ravens would develop a connection that was better than any other NFL teams. It would be nice if the Ravens could corner the fan base in Nigeria while other teams are looking at Europe or other places. There is roughly 25% of the population of Africa. It lives in Nigeria, I believe. It might be slightly less than that, but is a very substantial portion. Nigeria is one of the most populated countries on earth and the most populated in all of Africa. It'd be absolutely wonderful if they could get fans there and players there. And I hope they continue to develop. It's one of the big moves that Elias has made is improving the Ravens' Dominican presence. When you look at everybody else's roster, and there are just so many Dominican players around the league.
For sure. And it does seem to be more Nigerian-born players, at least Nigerian bloodlines, populating the NFL. Anecdotally, my son's best friend, his father was born in Nigeria, and he's far and away the best flag football player in the league. He's pretty much gets a touchdown every time he touches the ball. So yes, I would recommend trying to get that pipeline going.
Yeah, I mean it's one of the things that I used to look at for baseball was how large is the world's population that you're drawing from. And there's actually people have talked about expansion watering down the game because they had 16 teams and now they've got 30 and it's, you know, it's much, but the population you draw the players from is way more than doubled over that period. Far more in terms of where they get it from. I mean, they get people from the Pacific Rim. They've got lots of people from Latin America and Venezuela and places like that. It just completely has changed. And in football, I think we're seeing a similar thing. The game is becoming popular other places, but Nigeria alone, you know, being two-thirds of the size of the United States in terms of population, should just tell you it's not that everybody plays football there. It's not that the leagues are well developed, but they do have a pipeline of talent that comes from there and many other places as well.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Moving on, let's discuss how the Ravens plan to fill in for the loss of Tavius Robinson. Have not made a move yet. They did have a couple tryouts, which we'll get to here. But how do you see this shaking out heading into this week here, week 8? first.
They've limited their options because they didn't go outside the building to try and find a guy. I mean, you could argue that Ofada, I guess, is a guy that they looked at and they didn't sign, but they didn't get a new practice squad player. They didn't sign anybody from the street. They didn't sign a veteran who'd been around for a while. They didn't trade for a player, you know, when they could have this last week. But at 1-5, you know, there could be reasons why they're waiting on that one. So they've limited themselves to in-house options. So now they can activate Malik Ham or Kymen Rucker from the practice squad. Kymen Rucker, good pass rusher, or at least he was at North Carolina. Malik Ham, probably more of an all-around player, but he's also a year three player, not a whole bunch of upside for Malik at this point. Would be nice to, you know, Baltimore boy, would be nice to see him get some time for the Ravens here, but not a great option there. And, you know, they otherwise, I think, are limited to something that would be extremely, I want to say risky, but outside the box in terms of thinking, like moving Brent Urban to be an edge for a period of time. And I would be personally in favor of that if they think they can get early down snaps from Urban at edge and he can be effective there, then I'd be in favor of that.
Yeah, I think it can work in certain scenarios. Depends on the game script, certainly. If they're expecting to face the rush, then that makes sense to me. I actually wouldn't be opposed to elevating both Ham and Rucker if the numbers work. Now with Jackson hopefully healthy, you don't need to elevate Huntley. And with Okoye on the 53, you don't need to elevate a defensive tackle. So, and if you have to deactivate Jay Higgins or someone that's only playing special teams in order to activate both of the young edges, I think that might make some sense. You don't know what you're getting out of Ojabo. And besides him, you have Mike Green, the rookie, and Kyle Van Noy, the aging veteran. So, you know, sometimes just throwing extra bodies can be helpful.
Yeah, it's obviously their set of choices is extremely limited. And I did expect some sort of a street signing to occur over the bye week. And I'm just really surprised the Ravens haven't done it yet. But obviously they're trying to probably decide where they want to place their remaining fairly small bet that they have to make on the 2025 season. And they may be waiting till the results of these two games are in.
The one intriguing name that apparently was worked out or at least visited the Ravens was Carl Lawson, the former Bengal. He's a leverage-based bull rusher who gave Ronnie Stanley some problems years ago. 5 sacks last year for Dallas, so he presumably not completely empty tank. He's 29 years old. I'm slightly surprised if they were going to make the move. Why not make it? I do believe they have a little bit of fat they can trim from the 53 at this juncture.
Yeah, I would agree with that. And he's actually 30 now, 30 years old in June, but had been a good pass rusher for a number of years, came into the league with Cincinnati in 2017, and a guy who we certainly know from the division as being pretty effective. He did get a big contract, I think, from the Jets. So he's made a few bucks at the game, and he's a little bit above average size for a defensive end. He's not a pure leverage guy. He does have, I think, pretty decent length, but he weighs about 265, not 245, which is a good thing.
He's short. He's short. That's the thing. I think he's 6 foot, 6 foot one.
Ah, gotcha. Okay. Well, that's not good, but hopefully would, be a good port in a storm like right now for the Ravens. Do you want to take us through the injury report?
Sure. So the Ravens are relatively very healthy. You know, they do have 3 players on injured reserve. The one big addition potentially is Patrick Ricard, who has not seen action this season, who may be the elixir to solving some of the offensive line's problems.
I want to step back here and stop you for a second, because according to Jordan Schultz, and I don't know if this is real or not, but the Ravens are signing Carl Lawson.
Oh, wow.
And it's right on time. News came out 9 minutes ago from Schultz, and he was presented. But that this is interesting. Appreciate you, Cars Ruin Cities, for tagging me on that and making sure I saw it. But just came out a few minutes ago. But that makes a lot of sense. Yes. Probably, I'm sure he'll be in uniform Sunday.
Yes. So, again, he's short. But, you know, being short, then that was probably a benefit to Elvis Dumervil. So, you know, anything you can get from, you know, upgrading them, you know, you just need bodies. You can't go into a game with 3 outside linebackers.
Right. And we're not going to complain about who it is right now. He's had some success in the NFL, and that's a positive. All right, I'm sorry. I interrupted the injury report. Let's talk. Let's keep going.
Yeah, so Ricard's back. Stanley's practiced in full. Let's do the offense first, and then we'll go to defense. Flowers apparently is over the shoulder injury, and Devontae Walker is apparently full as well. He missed last game with an oblique injury. He's certainly been a core special teamer and a playmaker on offense. We'll give him a chance.
Yeah, you mentioned Ronnie Stanley already is practicing as well, but certainly a player that we want to see more from. In the last 3 weeks, he hasn't shown up. He's tried. I don't mean hasn't shown up in that way. Just hasn't been able to play like Ronnie Stanley.
Yeah, it's been a valiant effort for sure. Flipping over to the defensive side of the ball, Chidobe Awuzie missed the last couple games. Looks like he's a full go. Roquan Smith said he will play. That was a quote out of his mouth. And Marlon Humphrey missed Wednesday's practice with an illness after his constant talking about food on his social media. So who knows what he was eating. But he's back today. And Kyle Hamilton also appears ready to play. They really have one big question. That's number 8. Is he going to go? Is he not? And I think we have some mailbag questions that'll touch on our thoughts on that a little bit later. But that's, he's the elephant in the room.
Yeah, it's really all about him at this point. And I was trying to take a look at how the markets have been at looking at Lamar's return in terms of Ravens are still a 6.5-point favorite. They're hanging in there, which tells me markets remain unsure. Because to me, 6.5, either somebody knows exactly what's happening with Jackson, but this spread was the same before anybody knew, okay? Or that's an unstable line where it'll move in one direction when we finally hear whether Lamar Jackson is going to play or not. But strange situation here. I think that this is a case where gambling markets honestly really don't know whether he's going to play or not at this point.
I saw a trend earlier that teams with a 200 or less winning record laying more than 5 are have an unbelievable record covering the spread. So wow. I guess if you figure, if you have a bad record and you're playing a team with a winning record and you're still favored, Vegas knows what they're doing. So I guess that's kind of what I took from that.
All right. Well, fair enough. There was one national reporter who reported that he thought Jackson would be back for the Dolphins game. And it was based on conversations with several sources familiar with the situation. It was one of those things where, you question who he might've been talking to. I don't believe that. I mean, I don't believe that he'd be back for Miami if he doesn't play against Chicago. I think you either play both or you miss both.
I would agree. I would agree with that quick turnaround to the Miami game on a Thursday night. It's a must win. I mean, you don't want to say it's a must win. There's still a lot of games to go, but looking at the standings and the odds and how they could change with a win or a loss, it really is pretty much a must win already.
Yeah, I don't have any problem saying it's a must win. It's as must as a must win gets. There's so much riding on this, a bunch of things otherwise, but I mean, obviously season ticket holder, I just want to, look forward to the games that are playing and want to go to the games. That's important to me as an analyst. Oh boy, do I really want to have something that I want to enjoy talking about and write about. And I talked to one of my friends who covers the Browns, and he said that, the win against Green Bay was just a huge, very necessary win for purposes of his website doing well, and all of that about him enjoying, the analysis component of it. It's just,
interest definitely subsides if they're not competitive. Mm-hmm. On the other hand, I can see the logic in some fans hoping that the season record causes the replacement of John Harbaugh if they believe that's in the best interest of the team long term. So I could see both sides, but I certainly hope they remain competitive. They're playing for they would be the first team to ever three-peat in the AFC North. Nobody has ever done that before. So whether you believe that they can go on a postseason run or not, that's still something to play for.
I look at the 2012 team and just all the problems they had and the big losing streak they had in November and December and the way they turned it around and won the Super Bowl. And I say it's still possible. It's still conceivable this team could do it. That team was the 12th best team in the National Football League. They were pretty damn mediocre by DVOA standards. This team, I think, if they get Lamar Jackson back, they immediately catapult up. And we didn't even mention Ricard yet, did we, in terms of his return?
Just briefly, yeah.
Okay, I mean, huge addition to the offense that could potentially change things. So I'm hopeful. I don't think they'll win it with Ricard and not Lamar. I just don't have a lot of confidence this team can cobble together a win with a quarterback named not Lamar.
Yeah. So I'll put some numbers to it, not to step on Angelo's question, but now's the appropriate time. Ravens are currently plus 2,200 to win the Super Bowl. That's ninth highest, tied for ninth. The over-under is currently set at 8.5, juice to the under. So 8.5, juice to the under. So more likely that it would, at least the betting markets are showing under. If they lose to either Chicago or Miami, their chances to reach the postseason, according to analytical models, falls all the way to 27%. So these next two really are
still seems must high.
Win. Yeah, maybe.
That still seems high. So if they win one of the next two games, so that's the leverage on the Bears game directly.
Well, that's Bears directly, but if they won Bears, lost Dolphins, it would also fall to 27.
Exactly one of two means 27%. That's interesting because one of them is an AFC game and one of them is not.
Exactly. Right. Yep.
Okay. And then the other side of this coin is, and something I think a lot of people, there are definitely Ravens fans out there who want this, is they want to fire sale the players or they want to tank and get a really high draft pick. Let me just say this. If you're in the camp that thinks tank or make a trade kind of thing, just do one of the damn two, damn it. You're really talking out of both sides of your mouth. If you want the team to tank, I understand it. There's value in that, and there's potentially an enormous amount of draft capital in the hands of somebody who really knows how to use it in Eric DaCosta. If you're talking about like trading away picks and then tanking, you're out of your fucking mind. That's just all I'm going to say. There's no such gain from that.
Yeah, it's been an interesting season. A lot of people are up in arms. I think it's years of postseason disappointments and frustration and looking forward to this, what could be with Lamar, and now seeing that, some of the sands coming out of the hourglass, as you often say, it's ratcheted up the pressure. And honestly, some people don't know what the hell they're talking about too. So it's a combination of both.
Yeah, we have a little bit, we have a little bit of that going on for sure. So let's talk about not the fire sale, because we're going to have plenty of time to talk about the fire sale if that comes to pass with a loss. In either of these next two games, I think we'll be squarely discussing the November 4th trade deadline in a show we do after that Miami game. But where do you put the positions where the Ravens might want to trade for to salvage what they can from this season?
So I ranked this before the Carl Lawson news, and I ranked outside linebacker first, and I still believe outside linebacker should be first. There are a couple intriguing guys, especially down in Miami, that could be had. And if you look at the roster construction as a whole, I would say outside linebacker might be one of their weakest position groups after the trade of Odafe away. So that would be the first place to look, in my opinion.
Okay. All right. Carl Lawson, by the way, 3-1 relationship last year for Dallas between his pass rush and run snaps. His pass and run snaps total, it's more than 3-1. So he is a guy that I don't think he's expecting to play a lot of rundowns. And I don't know if Mike Green or Kyle Van Noy is that excited about playing a lot of rundowns either. So Ravens may have an issue with who they get in there. Maybe Malik Ham and Brent Urban or something can be their early down edge package. But they're going to need to find a way to keep some of their edge rushers on the field and able to rush the passer when the time is needed. Right now, so far, I don't think they're doing a very good job with Mike Green in terms of his development. By the way, we did a show on the development of Malachi Starks and Mike Green. It's under One Last Thing. Take a listen to that. I think it's one of the shows I'm proud of in terms of talking about how those guys are playing and when they're playing relative to other Ravens draft picks at the same positions of all time.
Mm-hmm.
And the spoiler for this is that I think basically the best thing for Malachi Starks is to play every snap at free safety, try and learn the position. There's not really a downside to him playing every snap. But in the case of Mike Green, I think there's a tremendous downside to him playing every snap. I don't think it's healthy, and I don't think it's a positive for his development to be on the field for as many run snaps as he's been on for so far. But he represents, you know, what the Ravens have at the position right now.
Yeah, Mike Green in the preseason, I think we both believed he'd be a designated pass rusher, more or less. Mm-hmm. Maybe in the offseason, we'll have to take a look back and say, why did Odafe Owe lose snaps, and why was he traded for relatively little, potentially? And but that's probably a topic for the offseason.
Yeah. All right. So you had outside linebacker at the top. Defensive line number two, is it for you?
Yes, it is number two. I think they've solidified a little bit with Okoye and Jenkins coming on strong. And there's not a whole lot of defensive linemen. I know some people want to trade a first-round pick for Quinnen Williams. I'm adamantly opposed to that. And it's not just, you know, Joe Schmo, it's people that I respect that have been covering this team for a long time, and they say, here's your opportunity. I always think it's tough when you trade. You have to give up the draft capital and also the contract.
Yeah.
And that's it's the double whammy. You want to avoid that if you can, and especially if you're looking at a potentially very early first-round pick.
Yeah, and there isn't anybody, I don't think, who's out there with a couple of years left on his contract who wouldn't want a new contract if you bring him in and you trade a first-round draft pick for him. That's wide receiver 101 in terms of holdouts, is get yourself traded, get yourself pissed, you know, get the team pissed off, get yourself traded out of town, and get a new contract from the new team.
We've seen them pay guys they traded for big Roquan. Contracts. Roquan and Eugene Monroe would be the other one I'd look to that didn't necessarily work out. You have to wonder, why are these teams trading away cornerstone players? Maybe there's something that they're missing there.
Okay, well, you and I have a little bit different opinion of Roquan. I think the money they have paid Roquan to date was worth the three all and the draft capital they spent was worth three all pro seasons. He's earned that money with the three all pro seasons. Now this year has not gone well, and he may or may not recover, and he may or may not be a Raven in 2026, which I'm not sure.
Let me tell you about the online cannabis company that's changing the game, Mood.com. They created an entirely line of functional gummies, 100% federally legal THC blends, discreetly delivered right to your doorstep. And here's the best part. You can get 20% off your first order at mood.com with the promo code Ravens. Now, I've tried a bunch of their gummies myself. Each one's totally unique. The Sleepy Time gummies knock me out right away. They help me unwind fast, leave me refreshed the next morning. The Epic Euphoria gummies, they're perfect for when your day just isn't going the way you want it to go. What makes Mood special is how they pair the THC with natural herbs and adaptogens. You won't find blends like this at any local shop. They've got gummies designed for focus, relaxation, clarity, even energy, all made from cannabis grown on small, family-owned American farms. No pesticides, no shortcuts, just high-quality weed you can trust. Plus, Mood backs everything with a 100-day satisfaction guarantee. So head on over to Mood.com, check out their amazing selection, and don't forget to use the promo code Ravens at checkout to save 20% off your first order.
Tremendously concerned about. But if you're really going to say it was a terrible trade to acquire Roquan for a second and a fifth and then pay him $20 million a year, I'm just not in agreement. I think the Ravens have gotten value out of the trade. Now, are there better ways to spend that money? You know, from ground zero, I probably say yes, there are better ways to spend that money. At that point, the Ravens season was going down the toilet because they didn't have a player like Roquan, and he completely fixed it from that standpoint. And in 23 and 24, it's the heart of the defense in terms of being central to it.
So I pushed back that he completely fixed it. I think it was a combination of factors, including Mike McDonald figuring out what he was doing and Kyle Hamilton being able to play in the nickel in 22. But from that regard, I would say if you're saying, would you give up a second and a fifth? I think this player they used that second on was Dexter, who's going to be the starting defensive lineman this week against the Ravens. You can make that case. I think the contract was – I don't think you can defend the contract. He was the 85th graded linebacker according to PFF in 2024. I think that was a paper all-pro season. You want to compare him to Fred Warner, who's the guy whose contract he's compared with, and equivalent, you know, closest competition. Warner was PFF's first, third, and then first this year inside linebacker. Roquan in 23 was 17th, 85th last year, 53rd this year. So I can't justify the contract, but I can see the logic in the trade if it was, the contract, I still can't. I can't agree to that. That was a good investment.
Okay. It's okay. It's healthy to have some disagreement in terms of those things. I don't look at that as being like a, if you're grading trades on a 1 to 10 scale, you know, I can understand if you think it's a 4 and I think it's a 6.5, no big deal. It's not that big deal, but it's not a 1 and it's not a 10. It's neither of those. We're both agreeing on that. It's somewhere in the middle of, you know, potential outcomes of a trade. And I'm with you that I don't like trades for inside linebackers where you give up a ton of draft capital and for really anybody where you buy the right with draft capital to pay the contract. That's why I don't want a player like Micah Parsons or like, I didn't want an all-in move made for Max Crosby, say, or somebody like that.
Yeah.
Those things just didn't make any sense to me. But at least Roquan directly addressed the team's need at the time and did a pretty good job of it, I thought. But we can, in terms of, as long as you're not telling me that the trade was a 1 on the 1 to 10 scale, then I'm fine with a disagreement of a couple points on where we are.
I'll give the trade a 6 and the contract a 3.
Okay, that's fair.
Okay.
Yeah, that's fair. Okay. And then the third position where they might make a trade, I've got one here, but what would be your choice?
I think it would be offensive guard, and I think Kevin Zeitler would be the natural fit, and he's on a one-year deal. He's played pretty well this year, top 10 last week. From PFF, there were some insiders that opined that they thought this might be the week that they moved off of Daniel Faalele. I don't think that's going to be the case. I think Harbaugh's going to sink or swim with his guys as he's done. He doesn't want to, you know, it would be an admission that he made a mistake and he's trying to, you know, find positives where he can. But I do think Kevin Zeitler could be an addition that would make some sense to this squad going forward.
Not unreasonable to pick up a player like Zeitler. And if it's a one-year contract situation where there essentially is almost no draft capital exchange, I don't have a problem with it. Faalele is leaving the team at the end of this year. So whatever you believe about him, then you can satisfy yourself if the cost is not too great by having a Kevin Zeitler around. In truth, I don't think it's where the offensive line problem is at all. I think both guard spots have outplayed left tackle and center. So we got other problems when your two highest paid linemen, or at least, you know, one's an enormous draft capital sinking and the other is a big contract. Those are the guys who really aren't playing well. Rosengarten's been okay. Voorhees has now played 3 of the last 4 games well. And Faalele, for all the clips and how easy it is to find individual run plays and even some pass plays where he gets himself in trouble or looks like a confused oaf on the field or just stumbles around with very substandard mobility, the guy's a good pass blocker. He doesn't need a ton of penalties, although it's been worse this year than it has been in the past. And it generally does not give up a bunch of negative events as I score it. And most negative events occur on pass plays. PFF has him as the 14th highest rated of 57 guards in terms of pass blocking. It's really hard to be bad. You really have to trip over your own dick as a run blocker to not be able to be one of a pretty decent guard when you're that good a pass blocker. So
yeah,
PFF's combined score, by the way, does not make sense. I've said this a number of times, but they have a weighting system which tremendously overrates run blocking at center, and it moderately overrates run blocking at guard. So that's one of the reasons why the combined score does not look as good. But if you look at his pass blocking score separately, he's doing the job.
Yeah, that's certainly fair. I think it's more of a, and I don't want to speak for anybody else, but I believe Zarebeck predicted that they would make a change there because they want to go to more outside zone, and he doesn't fit that quite as well. But to me, and you don't want to, I know we're not going to get into fire sale ideas too much right now, but if they were to trade Linderbaum, who's probably their biggest trade chip at the moment and put Bullock in. I think that would be beneficial. First, you see what Bullock has. Bullock's bigger, he's taller, he's heavier, and he has longer arms than Linderbaum, and that could really help some of the pass protection problems and the short yardage problems, which I think having a small center, it certainly contributes to the short yardage issues.
Yeah, I'm with you entirely on that. I'd be fine with it. I think they probably really have to move on this next year at this point. I don't think these two sides are going to be able to come to an agreement on a contract. And look, I don't know how reasonable Tyler Linderbaum is, or his agent is, or the people around him, or whoever's advising him. I really don't have a good sense of where they would fit in on a contract. But if he makes Creed Humphrey money, I'm going to really be upset about it.
Yeah, that would be the, in my view, the offensive version of the Brandon Williams contract. So okay. I don't think that's beneficial for the team, overvaluing the run at the expense of the pass and giving a big contract to a guy who's a good player, not a great player.
Yep. All right. So let's see. I had the question here. Do we see a trade being made before the Bears or Dolphins game? I'm guessing that Carl Lawson is going to be it. I don't know for sure. I mean, there's one day of walkthrough left. The only thing that could really put Lawson on the field for this Sunday, and I'm not saying they don't need this, is the go get the quarterback playbook.
Yeah. Well, I mean, it's not super difficult. Pin your ears back and do whatever, you know, whatever's in your pass rush repertoire. I don't expect them to be dropping him into coverage. Did they drop? Is he signed to the 53? Do we know?
No, they don't have information like that. Jordan Schultz says, sources, the Ravens are signing D.E. Carl Lawson after having him in for a workout. Lawson notched 5 sacks last season for the Cowboys and has been waiting for the right opportunity, period.
Okay. So
there's no important details about what's going on or whether he's playing Sunday or anything like that. But if he's, you know, the Ravens haven't made another move, and they otherwise, you know, their other choices, Malik Ham or Kymen Rucker as a pass rusher.
Yeah. So do I want to see a trade made before the next two games? Absolutely not. We need to let it play out, see what comes. Having the Thursday night game before the deadline is a potentially a small advantage where they have a little bit more time to take stock of where they are and figure out what they want to do, which way they want to go at the deadline. So I definitely don't want to see something made. They have enough. Even if Lamar doesn't play, they still should have enough to be pretty competitive in these games. You see other teams around the league that have, you know, maybe worse injury reports that are winning games and being competitive. So, you know, this is where the depth of the roster, which we all thought, many of us thought was a Super Bowl caliber roster, needs to come to the surface and show itself.
Right. Yeah. So I'm certainly with you there. They do have enough talent to get through these two games in theory with wins if they have Lamar. And if they don't have Lamar, you know, making a trade for a team that doesn't have Lamar is particularly empty move. And it actually could be more than counterproductive. It could be a losing trade in terms of whatever draft capital you trade away. And then it could also potentially help you be a little bit better down the stretch where there's not a hell of a reason to be if you lose one of these next two games. So
not to go backwards, but that would be the case against the Roquan trade, what you just said.
So in 22, when they acquired Roquan, Lamar was healthy. Okay.
No, it didn't end up that way.
No, no.
I'm pretty sure Lamar was hurt at the time of the trade.
Okay.
Halloween was a trade, but I don't know when Lamar got hurt.
Lamar missed 6 games or so at the end of the year. I want to say he got hurt in November, but we will look right now because that is an important piece of information. And it would make a difference in terms of how you would view this. I'd understand that. But offense 2022, looking at that. So Lamar was still playing until week 13 when he got hurt in the Denver game. And Roquan was acquired well before that. Obviously, the trade deadline, so it was well before week 13. That should
week be week 9. Up. Yeah. I stand corrected. I apologize.
Okay. No biggie. I'm not looking for them to make another trade. I'm this signing. This is what they need to do to plug the hole in the boat currently for the next two games, I hope. And I'm certainly not looking for another trade unless they get through these two games and then they're 3-5 and hopefully looking up. But I would not be trying to do something right this second.
Yeah, I mean, they're there are not too many holes in the boot. You're missing Matabike, who's obviously been a huge loss. But other than that, you have your whole squad. So it's time for the coaches and the players to get on the same page and put some good football out there.
Right. All right. You want to talk some mailbag questions here?
Sure.
All right. I did put out a question for there. A few people answered it, and I think they answered similarly enough that we're not going to go over everybody's individual response, but there are a couple specific questions. Kendall Brown. Kendall, I think this might be your first time in the mailbag. Really appreciate you coming. You had several things. I'm just going to hit with one thing here. So he did not see any major selling occurring, but he stated that the window is open. That he thought a pass rusher, defensive tackle, or offensive lineman are the three in order, which is exactly like we have it. So hopefully number one has been addressed with the loss and acquisition, assuming that's real. And he said that the two players he'd like to trade away are Mark Andrews and Tyler Linderbaum. Now, Mark Andrews, I understand why people want to trade him. I want to see him traded for the right price, probably for a lot of reasons. Maybe a fresh start would help Mark Andrews for starters, but it would definitely be a chance for the Ravens to restart the Rome. Unfortunately, the Ravens have everybody graduating, quote unquote, out of that tight end room, including Ricard, at the end of this year. If you want Andrews back, he's one of the guys you probably can get back at a reasonable price.
Yes, most likely. It's not out of the realm of possibility that you could trade a player away and then re-sign them after the year.
Yeah.
You could bring them back. We've seen that happen a couple times before. So I agree, you know, if these next two games go south, I would sell everything you could possibly sell. Even if you're getting day three picks, you can hypothetically combine them to move up in the draft. And it also gives you some cap relief if you get out from underneath every veteran contract you have, or a guy that's not going to be here next year. That could potentially be enough cap space to sign one player, a mid-level contract for next year.
Yeah, it's not a ton, but trading Mark Andrews, if you trade him at the deadline, is worth $3.5 million of cap space that can be rolled forward into next year. Mm-hmm. As it currently stands, the Ravens have an enormous problem with the Lamar Jackson contract. It's escalating to an enormous number next year. They're going to have to cut some players, to make that work and get their roster otherwise filled out. But it's $74.5 million, so they have to try and restructure him. Now, normally, if you had any other normal quarterback team relationship, that would not be a problem. I don't think the Ravens, relationship with Lamar Jackson is bad. It's weird. But Lamar does not have an agent. There's nobody, no intermediary for the thing. He doesn't return phone calls is the word. And so the Ravens have a hard time reaching him to try and make an arrangement with him. It could be potentially very tough for the 2026 Ravens in terms of structuring their roster. So, I do think the relationship between Harbaugh, Eric DaCosta, and Lamar is just fine. I think Lamar is happy being a Raven. I think he's happy playing with Derrick Henry, with a lot of the other players on the team. I just think that relationship is extraordinarily weird.
The vibes are weird all around. We had this article in the Baltimore Sun this last Monday. They interviewed 25 players anonymously, and they had all kind of reports. And I can't ever remember a time that there was an anonymous player speaking to media throughout. And I've been a diehard Ravens fan since '99, and I can't remember once that ever happening.
Yeah, there probably has been. I mean, there were times in Lewis in 2009 said some things, and it wasn't at the in real time. So maybe this is an important distinction that I'm claiming is similar. But he said that Rex Ryan was really the coach of the head coach of the 2008 Ravens, which is it's such a non-constructive thing to say. First of all, Ryan is gone. He's with the Jets now in 2009, although he was there in 2008 under Harbaugh as a defensive coordinator. There's nothing to be gained by saying something like that after right. He's gone. So those kind of things were bad. Obviously, in 2007, the word is Bisciotti went through the clubhouse and was talking to players, and they just didn't have a lot positive to say about Billick at that point.
Right.
Players don't like losing either, by the way. They really don't like it. One of the interesting things I thought, aside from that article, was the fact that all of these machines and, game machines and the ping pong table were taken out of the Ravens locker room. Mm-hmm. And everybody immediately said, what the hell is Harbaugh trying to do kind of thing? Well, it turns out Harbaugh apparently didn't have anything to do with it. The equipment manager did it at the behest of some veteran players who said, you know, this is just the thing we need around here for focus kind of things. The move was triggered after that. I do honestly believe that. I don't think Harbaugh would try and say, I didn't have anything to do with that. I think he would have been the first one to say, yeah, we needed to get more focused. But he said,
I have a hard time. I have a management degree and I've worked in management my whole life. And to have, I think he may have been involved behind the scenes. I have a hard time believing a few veteran players get to decide what is allowed in the locker room without the head coach having to say. What about the other 50 players? What if they all wanted it and three players said they didn't, and then it comes out and the head coach has nothing to do with it? I'm skeptical that.
Here's the reason why I don't believe it. And I agree with you. I'm working in companies, we run into management problems like this all the time. But one of the things I'd say is you run yourself an enormous risk by denying you had anything to do with it, because there's a whole bunch of people who have to keep that secret for you. And I just don't believe they would. The other portion about this is, let's say three of the veteran players came to Harbaugh and said, look, this is ridiculous. These guys are laughing and playing they're playing their music really loud, and the ping pong tournament is more important to them than being on time for practices. If they went to Harbaugh with that, if they said that and Harbaugh said, you know, you're 100% right, get that shit out of there, he should be taking credit for it, not denying that he had anything to do with it.
I think that's probably more what happened, that second scenario, just because I wouldn't give three players or two players the authority to decide what happens to the other players in the locker room. It should be, unless they had the leadership council that they had and then they didn't and now they have it again. I don't know, just weird. Honestly, the more concerning thing out of that article was one of the quotes was, they felt like the Buffalo game in week one this year got them off to such a negative start and they were in their heads and felt like the season was already over. That's more where you say, why is Harbaugh, you know, that's what he's supposed to be doing is fostering a positive, optimistic, competitive locker. And that should not have had that effect. That was more concerning to me, was that comment.
Okay. I'm very, very infrequently are players truly honest about how they're affected mentally and negatively in real time. Okay. Mm-hmm. Even like 6 weeks later, like is the case with that loss to Buffalo. I can tell you as a fan, and I think I speak for anyone who's out there listening, probably that was an unbelievably negative event. And you know, if you're in Buffalo, it's that much worse as a fan. And I'm sure as a player as well, having that happen on the field having to leave that place. There's so many things I'll remember about that trip home. Driving through Pennsylvania should not be as negative a thing, but central Pennsylvania, you drive through on the way home from Buffalo, is an awful place. I mean, it's just an awful place. And you're driving through the night there and the factories are putting out more pollution than they do during the day. You can't even breathe the air. I mean, it's horrible. We stayed in a hotel there and I'm thinking, how could people live here and breathe this air here? It's awful. So so many things I'll remember. And I think it's all triggered by the fact that the Ravens lost that football game. I don't think you ever hear that. I think the most you ever say is a team that wins the Super Bowl says, you know what? That loss in week 13, when we were 12-0 was probably the best thing for us. So you get that kind of crap, the self propagating, you know, stuff, but you never get players being honest about, you know what? We really never recovered from that. It's been four weeks and we're still in the dumps over that.
They got to stack some wins. That's the only way through. The only way through is to stack some wins.
Yep.
So anyway, let's move on to the next mailbag question from Angelov85. Always appreciate your support, Ange. Hey, Ken and Voss. Definitely sell if they lose both, although winning only keeps them alive because I believe 10-7 gets a wild card or maybe division. We need trench up on both sides of the ball. She brings up Andrews as a potential, and also Keaton Mitchell as a potential dark horse trade. And she has a secondary question. Let's go do this one first.
So Keaton Mitchell is a secondary one, is one we've addressed before. I don't know if we've addressed it on this show, but we had a trade candidates show where we looked at Keaton Mitchell. I would be opposed in a significant way on that. Also, at the midseason roster review, Brian McFarland had something interesting to say. He said that he thought that Rasheen Ali might be the guy who'd step in with a lot of carries if something happened to Derrick Henry. I think he could be right. I don't think either Hill or Mitchell are really built to take on an extreme workload, but I think they're both an order of magnitude more valuable in terms of how they do the specific things that they're good at, misdirection in Mitchell's case or pass blocking in Hill's case.
I don't think they would go to a workhorse back situation there. I'm trying to pull up 2023. They had Gus, Justice, and Keaton. And let's see. Gus had 200 carries. Justice had 85, and Keaton had almost 50. And Melvin Gordon was also there. You can find a Rasheen Ali if you need a bigger body. Right. There's plenty of guys on the street. I don't think the return would be worth parting with Mitchell, although he's entering his RFA year.
RFA year, yeah.
And honestly, I wouldn't be completely surprised if he's inactive in week eight here, because now you have Devontae Walker back potentially. And it's been, it's been really tough for Keaton to gain traction this season.
Mm-hmm. All right. It is an interesting situation. The best thing they could probably do with Mitchell is to come to an agreement on a 2-year deal for $5 million or something. But there would probably be some resistance to paying him the minimum tender, even in terms of that. They might do it, or they might just decide they don't want to. I'll just say his 3 years here have been run the entire gamut from high to low in terms of what's happened. And just, it's so frustrating. The injury is right up there with Lardarius Webb's early career injury in terms of its impact on his career. And just very frustrating.
No, I don't think I'd tag Keaton. I mean, again, it's running back. It's a replaceable position. Let's see if you can extend him for near Bettman. But I don't see much benefit in trading. You're just basically helping a competitor. What are you going to get back from? Sixth at best? I don't see that. Ant has another question here. Should LJ play if not 100%? What do you think, Ken?
I think that's a decision that players make every week in the NFL, that they have to decide if they're really ready to play or not. Everybody's hurt as soon as the season gets to the halfway point or so, everybody's hurt. Ravens are in a good position that everybody's coming off a bye here. Lamar is clearly the most important player on the Ravens. There's a lot of pressure for him to play. I think he needs to decide for his own personal, how it affects him personally and how it affects his legacy, maybe both in terms of whether he, and they may actually be competing with each other for a game like this. Yeah.
Good point. Great. It could be competing. What was it, 2022, like we talked about earlier? It took him a while to come back, longer than we thought. I think he should try to give it a go. The risk of making it worse does not seem to be, with a hamstring, does not necessarily seem to be there. Although there are certain players that have chronic hamstring injuries. So, you know, we're not privy to that. Limited. He definitely wasn't playing at 100% before the injury, it seemed, when middle linebackers are beating him to the edge. So I think you should try to give it a go, but we'll see how it goes.
Yeah. All right. I think that's going to do it for today's show. Voss, always a pleasure to talk football with you. Tell folks where they can talk to you online. A brief plug for the restaurant.
Yes. Excuse me. Twitter X at Vasilis Fiamata, VasilisFiamata. Fiamata is the name of the new restaurant, located at 2900 Baltimore Boulevard. Website is thefiamata.com.
All right. Other folks out there, thanks so much for listening. We know this is one of the shows that people really appreciate in general, but there's probably more activity this year with regard to this show, a lot more questions about what to do with the roster. And we're going to know a lot better, like you will, in 2 weeks, exactly what's going on. If the Ravens can get through these two games, I think it's back to trying to make a run at the playoffs, trying to get as far as this team can this year with the players they've got. And if they don't, I think we're going to see a drastically different Ravens team potentially in the second half of 2025. You in the same place, Foss?
Yeah, I mean, I think they can get to the playoffs. I fear a matchup with KC because I think they have a coaching advantage. But maybe the Ravens can win the turnover battle in the postseason and make it happen for once.
Yeah. I mean, isn't there any year where you fear a matchup, another game in Buffalo that, you know, I would just dread, or another game in Kansas City or at home against Kansas City, either one, that would be bad as well? I mean, that's the nature of the playoffs. You play tough teams. I'll tell you, in 2012, I dreaded the game in Denver, and then I dreaded the game at New England, both of them.
Yep.
And they both turned out okay.
Same boat. So never give up hope. I'm with you there for sure.
All right. Voss, always a pleasure. For Voss Ricos, this is Ken McCusick, and we'll talk to you next time on Film Study.